The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Guardian World Cup Football Daily. In Monday's World Cup action, France fired up, but Nigeria get burned as ref fails to put Blaise out. While Germany beat Algeria, despite same lack of composure as Beethoven's Last Symphony and a similar level of finishing. We review the lot and then look at Tuesday's big games. USA back in action against Belgium and, yes, Argentina, Switzerland. It's all coming up in Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Hey friends! Yeah, the party's on.
I like big butts.
Okay, James. Weighing in early with the facts there. James Horncastle.
Hello.
Yeah. John Ashton, you managed to stay on board for this one.
Yeah.
All right.
I hitched a lift on one of these floats.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. And Barry Glendenning.
Looking resplendent in my giant feather headdress.
You certainly are, Barry. How about that? Well, there are some teams celebrating, but there are some teams that are not celebrating on this World Cup evening. And once again, it's the underdogs. Once again, they've pushed the big teams, the more illustrious sides, to the limit, but they've not quite made it. Mexico, Nigeria, and now Algeria, but not quite getting there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, really, because they really did themselves proud, but I think in the end it was a failure to take chances and possibly a lack of fitness that did for them in the end. They, you know, towards the end of the second half of extra time, Algeria, most of their players were just absolutely dead on their feet. Mm. And whereas Costa Rica were able to get through their game last night with players suffering just as badly, Algeria couldn't. I mean, which is not to take away from a performance that was little short of heroic. I didn't give them a prayer of pushing Germany that close.
Mm. Well, it was 0-0 in the first 90 minutes. But what a 0-0, John. A spectacular number of opportunities for Algeria. Some spectacular number of times that Manuel Neuer had to come screaming out of his area.
Yeah, well, he played the sort of keeper-sweeper or sweeper-keeper role. Brilliantly, actually, and he had to because of the problems that Mertesacker was having in keeping up with the Algerian attackers. And I think that the way they started, if they'd taken, I suppose it changes the game, but their best chances seemed to come in the first sort of 30 minutes.
Algeria.
Algeria's chances. Mm. And then Germany sort of took control for half an hour, and then they had to rejig it again, and with Lahm moving out to right back. And for 10 minutes again, Algeria were all over them. Mm. And it was only sort of extra time when they faded. And both keepers could lay a fair claim, I think, to being their side's best player, because Mboli was superb as well.
Certainly was, wasn't he? Once again, we saw substitutions being decisive for Germany and for Algeria. The Algerian manager taking Taider off before extra time. Why was the Algerian fan worried about the extra time? Because the manager had tied a knot in it.
He was so pleased with that.
I don't get it. Because the manager had tied a knot in it. Not in it. He'd taken him off before.
Okay, yeah. Now I get it.
Yeah. Anyway, more successful, though, was Jogi Löw's substitution.
Yeah, I mean, particularly bringing on
Schürrle for Götze.
Yeah, and Khedira as well. I thought Khedira made a real difference when he came on. And, yeah, perhaps going forward we will see, yeah, Khedira, Schweinsteiger in midfield. Maybe I thought they looked better when Lahm was at fullback again. To be fair, I thought a lot of the early chances that Algeria had were again profiting on Germany having four centre backs. Yeah, a lot of those sort of diagonal balls in between centre back and fullback seemed to do for them. And poor Mustafi went off injured at one point, I don't know whether that's a torn muscle or what, but yeah, a lot of sort of probably more negatives than positives for Germany coming out of this game. And as you said at the start, a lot of teams that have done themselves great credit have gone out, you know, Chile, Mexico and Nigeria and Algeria, and the teams that have gone through, Colombia aside, have all been outplayed for various spells. And that was the, again, that was the case tonight.
Right. So as you say, a lot of question marks for Germany, even though they get the win. But one of the things that becomes most clear at this point is that wearing green really does your chances, doesn't it? Because you've got Nigeria, Mexico and Algeria now. Well, they've all gone out.
Yeah.
And
Ireland didn't even qualify.
There you go. But I mean, we joke about this, but James,
Germany had their second shirt, which was in green, but Oliver Bierhoff thought it'd be a good idea to change it out of superstition. Although there was this kind of marketing ploy that they'd have a Flamengo influence.
Oh, so when they played the USA game in the Flamengo shirt, that's... Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, going into this tournament, I think Adidas thought it'd be a... They wanted to make a change anyway, so they thought they'd make a Brazil-inspired change, a Flamengo change. But when they played in this green shirt a couple of years ago, it didn't. They got some poor results, so out of superstition, they went. They changed.
Right.
I'm now worried about John Ashton, who's wearing an Algeria-inspired Swatch watch.
Oh, right, yeah. And his shirt's quite green as well. John, has the knowledge ever done anything on the winningest and losingest shades of jersey?
Don't think so. I think there's probably some sort of club red bias in sort of British football, but largely because of Man United and Arsenal and Liverpool all wearing red. But no, not in international teams. Maybe we should have a look at
it. Just saying, yeah.
I suspect there might be a red and white lack of success bias, red and white stripes. I can think of a lot of clubs who aren't very good.
Red and white at an international level as well might be struggling a little. I can think of one nation that's been dragging the average down. But anyway, so yeah, 0-0 after 90 minutes, and you've probably seen then as soon as extra time got started, Germany scored, then they doubled up, and then right at the death, Algeria finally managed to put one of their chances away. So they didn't quite do it, but my word, it was extraordinary. And
And they had another chance after Jabu, the substitute scored, and it was a fine goal, volley from the edge of the six-yard box. But moments after that, Slimani, who was the guy who kept just getting pipped to the ball in one-on-ones when Neuer was galloping out of his penalty area, he had a header which sort of, he couldn't get much power on it, and he was... exhausted, but he forced Neuer to make another save, you know. But even so, it would have gone to penalties and Germany would have won, so yeah, it was kind of irrelevant.
Sensational game though, anyway.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Great to watch Al Jazeera.
Yeah. You're making an ironic reference there to a little slip by Glenn Hoddle.
Well, it was pointed out to me that because I mentioned this slip by Glenn Hoddle in the minute by minute report, and it was pointed out that I was perhaps being a little harsh on him because the Arabic name of Algeria is Al Jazeer, which is a plural of Al Jazeera. So he was actually correct.
I'm quite sure that's what he meant. On the basis of this, were Algeria way better than anyone expected, or are Germany not the side we were thinking? And what happens when they face France, who earlier on Monday beat Nigeria 2-0, but again, didn't look all that convincing?
Well, there is a couple of schools of thought. One is that perhaps Group H, which everyone was very down on, far from being the group of meh, was perhaps the most difficult group. And another is that Germany were perhaps a bit leggy after playing their group matches. I think all their group matches were in places that were extremely hot.
Well, the last one was in Manaus, wasn't it? Sorry, not Manaus, in Recife, and there was this massive thunderstorm with that. Do you remember the last German one? It was the one where they thought... Against USA, it was the
rain, you're correct.
So I don't know,
but so that's basically torpedoed that particular theory.
It might have been very humid that night.
I think Algeria better than a lot of people were giving them credit for. I mean, we all know that now, but when they lost their opening game to Belgium, people were saying, "Ah, Belgium, come on, it's only Algeria." And yeah, they went in their next game and blitzed South Korea. Yeah, a more difficult team than many were anticipating.
But Michael Cox, before the tournament, was even started had tipped them as ones to watch. He reckoned they'd be pretty impressive.
He tipped them as winners. He actually put a bet on that.
Win the World Cup?
Yeah. Well, as a, you know, just an outside bet, just to put a quid on it.
Yeah, he still put money on them.
Well, a quid, you know. He was just being... He wasn't doing it with any sort of seriousness, but...
I can't imagine Michael Cox putting a bet on a team to win something without an element of seriousness. Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about France, which I can... this game, terrific that was, did go on for a very long time, the Germany-Algeria one. And I'm struggling to remember that... So, Nigeria, first half, looked the better side and indeed put the ball in the net, only to have it called back for offside, which was very, very tight indeed. I think Nigeria might have felt a little bit harshly treated about that, John.
Yeah, well, I think when offsides are that close, I think the decision can go either way. And I think if it's that close, you should probably just give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker.
They looked the better side in the first half.
Yeah, I think they did. There was a terrible tackle from
Matuidi on Onanazi,
which seemed to sort of
Onanazi. Then with a broken ankle, post that.
Oh, is that what's happened?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people. You were certainly tweeting, James, that was the turning point.
I thought it was because France stayed with 11 men on the pitch. It was an argument that an earlier challenge that Matuidi made was worthy of a yellow card, and he would have got his second yellow on that. And Onanazi had given Nigeria some balance prior to that, and they lost it when he went off. And then, you know, Deschamps made the changes. He brought on Griezmann, who is so much better than Giroud, Benzema went into the middle. And they clicked, and all of a sudden they really ratcheted up the pressure. And Enyema, who'd been superb up until then, made a mistake, and Pogba capitalised on it.
All right. Well, let's hear what a resident Frenchman, Philippe Auclair, made of the game, and indeed the prospect of Germany in the quarters.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, did you have a bit of a nervous afternoon?
Very much so.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Because, L'Equipe today had a lovely front page saying the gates of paradise and that. But it looked for a long time like it was Nigeria was going to be walking through. What was the change? Was it bringing Griezmann on? Is that what changed the game?
I think partly that, partly the fact as well that I think the energy levels of Nigeria dropped a bit in the second half after, starting on such a up-tempo, I think, as well. Losing players the way they did didn't help. I think France got lucky again. I mean, I think we all agree that Blaise Matuidi should have been sent off, and that was one of a very important point. What can you say? Yes, I do think that the change was, of course, very, very important, and it's not. People have been very, very tough with Olivier Giroud. You've probably seen that and saying horrible things about him. I think it's more also about perhaps more. About Karim Benzema moving into a position where he felt a little bit more implicated in the game, so to speak, even if he had a very poor game by his standards. And Griezmann is just... we knew that. I think we'd been talking about it when we were talking about Ribéry's absence and the fact, and I seem to remember telling you, I don't think it would be a problem at all. I think Griezmann is perfectly able to replace him, given the form that he was in with Real Sociedad. And given the form that Ribéry was in with Bayern Munich, and you know we have had another illustration of that. He's an incredibly clever player. He's an incredibly skillful player, and his movement is absolutely superb. And France, it's true, looked far more balanced when he was on the pitch and Benzema moved back in. But there were other elements as well, and I do think that Nigeria was seriously disorganized by the injuries suffered by two of their players.
Well, Philippe, France looking a little bit ragged today then, and a big test on the way against Germany. Your thoughts?
I do think, again, that France, perhaps against that particular German team, has the means to destabilize it.
By kicking them off the park?
I mean, we can try that again. After all, we've tried it since the beginning of the tournament, quite spectacularly in some cases, and I've got away with it. No, but I was more thinking of what is the strength of that French team, which is its midfield. And I think that the Germans are not necessarily the best equipped to deal with this trio of Pogba, Matuidi and Yohan Cabaye, who sometimes was in difficulty against the Nigerians. It is true, perhaps as well because some of the forwards were not tracking back and so forth. But I do think that in that part of the pitch, certainly France has got the arguments. And also, I think that the defense is growing in confidence. I think the victory against Nigeria was, I mean, colossal in many ways, because if many people in France thought we're in the quarters, I can tell you Didier Deschamps certainly wasn't. And I'm still waiting to be convinced by this German team that it has the qualities. It's a bit like, how do you call that, a curate's egg in English?
Yeah, you do. What do you call a curate's egg in French, then?
But there's no expression, which is why I'm using the English.
Okay. Might surprise some people, though, to know there's a lot of people in France who were happy to be facing Germany and not Algeria.
Yeah, well, there have been incidents already when Algeria qualified in France, when Algeria qualified for the round of 16. We have kept very, very bad memories of the last meeting between the two sides at the Stade de France, when there were massive police presence. The Marseillaise was booed in the Stade de France. People took very badly to that. It created this whole atmosphere of aggressivity, aggression, feeding on all the prejudices and the racial and ethnic tension that there is in France, and which is stronger now than it was then. There were a number of incidents, very violent incidents indeed, and this was for a friendly at the Stade de France. Oh. We're talking about a place in the semi-finals.
Well, that's fascinating, Philippe. We'll catch up with you ahead then, perhaps, if we may, of that Germany quarterfinal.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much.
No, à toi.
À toi aussi.
Ah, Philippe Auclair. Goodbye then to the Africans. Odin Wingy didn't have the best of games in this one, did he, James?
He didn't, no. He was picked up on... I watched it on Sky Italia, and he was picked up 5 minutes in. There's a France corner, and there's him in his own net with his back to the play, sort of taking a drink like that. And, yeah, the ball's coming in, and he's still drinking. He's turned around, oh, what's happened? And then there's another thing later where I think one of his players was down injured, and I think France had a 1-2, and Yema, it was cleared off the line, and it came to him, and the natural thing to do would be just boot it, because one of his teammates was down injured, and he tried to like dribble five or six players and lost the ball.
He also inexplicably put the ball behind for a corner, which led directly to the second French goal. But, you know, not wishing to pick on him, it reminded me a little bit of the great Roberto Carlos one from 2006 when he decides to do up his shoelaces while France is taking a free kick. And was it Ribéry who just bombs past him while he's knelt down, busy fiddling away? Anyway, and scores. Yeah, there you go. They've all gone.
Well, does it count as a good World Cup for Africa or a bad one? Because
I'm going to say
it's
bad.
The first time they'd ever got two teams into the last 16.
Yeah.
So are two teams in the last 16?
Well,
worse,
you know, because we said it was
the last eight.
We said it hadn't been an edifying World Cup for African sides, and I think maybe we should have said sub-Saharan African sides when at the end of the group stages, and a lot of people came back and said, "But there's a record two teams through."
Well, I think I sort of had a exchange views with someone in the comment section about this, because they were saying that we were wrong and that they'd got two teams through and it was therefore a record-breaking success. But at the time, African teams had played 15 matches and only won three of them. I don't think that's good.
No.
Out of five teams, two of them imploded over, you know, in fighting and bickering. One went out and two went through. May have been their best performance ever, but it's certainly nothing to get too excited about.
Nope.
I guess their goalkeepers are good. Mboli and Enyema puts a end to that sort of stereotype of African goalkeepers.
That's very true. Hmm? Interesting. How about this from Tim Crutchy? He says, surely the greatest team of this World Cup, or at least the alumni of it, is Porto. Be interesting to know the percentage of players passing through. Very true, isn't it? So many great players seem to have come from Porto. So many great players as well seem to have been offered to Man United and passed up. Have you seen how many?
Yeah, and apparently Mboli, the Algerian goalkeeper, was on trial for them a few years ago.
But Porto, eh?
Yeah, but they probably never owned hardly any of those players. They probably had 10% stakes in them or something.
All right.
I also think it's harsh to ridicule teams for not picking up these players when they were younger, or also to pick up for not picking up players who've had, you know, there are lots of players who've had great World Cups and then gone on to not do very much afterwards.
That's quite true, Barry.
El Hadji Diouf is one who springs to mind. you know, so people could have said at the time, oh, you know, Manchester United had the chance to sign him and didn't.
Do it in the comic book store, guy, boys. Do it in the comic book store. Go on, Barry.
I'm struggling to remember. It's so late. I'm struggling.
You did you.
That's your Arsene Wenger voice.
Oh, yeah. Hey, great shot. He's keeping himself in form, isn't he, Arsene Wenger? We've all seen the shots of him and his kind of speedos, basically, on the beach.
Well, he's not wearing traditional budgie smugglers or shorts. Daniel Craig type walking out of the sea. Because he walked out of the sea and Daniel Craig was once pictured walking out of the sea. Ah. Then one newspaper sort of made, oh, look, it's Daniel Craig.
Right. Excellent.
He wasn't quite as buff as Daniel, but
no.
Carrying himself well for an old
that,
man.
Mm-hmm. 66 or whatever he is now. You'd definitely take that, I think. Mm-hmm. Bite your hand off this stage.
Take that and party. Yep. Indeed. Hey, no party for South Korea, who got pelted with toffees on the return home. Terrible, terrible scenes, really.
Yeah, well, apparently, go eat a toffee means something akin to get lost or screw you.
Really?
In Korea.
Go eat a toffee?
Yeah. It's quite a good insult. I quite like that as an insult.
Go eat a toffee.
Have Korean players played for Everton before?
Well, there's a question, isn't there? Has Suarez ever played for a Korean side that then played Everton?
Well, either way, it's certainly given Hong Myung-bo something to chew on at the end of the tournament. Penny for his thoughts. Toffee penny, of course.
I wonder whether everyone will get that joke.
It's a whether a toffee. That's the other question.
It isn't really original.
Well, I've never been so glad to hear from Nat Coombs.
Stop fudging.
So this is the bit of the podcast you can skip or hum loudly over my voice until I stop talking. We've got a brand new Guardian Football channel on YouTube, which is home to all kinds of original video content, including a daily news show out every lunchtime, filling you in on all the best and funniest press and social media reaction to the night before, as well as previews of all the big games with a range of special guests. Check out youtube.com/Guardian Football.
Right, well, Tuesday's delights include the mass talents of Argentina as they take on Switzerland in a game rich with emotion, but also maybe the standout encounter in Salvador, Belgium taking on USA. Delighted to say that we're joined now by ESPNFC.com, Jeff Carlisle, who's there in Salvador. Hi, Jeff.
James, how are you?
Well, we're very well here. We're very well here. What's the mood like there in Salvador?
There's a lot of anticipation from the U.S. side. I think they're looking at this as a fantastic opportunity. Obviously, they're taking on a Belgium team that has yet to really show the best in this tournament. So, I think there's a lot of confidence within the U.S. squad. Also, some wariness because obviously Belgium is a talented team with a lot of players that can turn a match in an instant. So, a lot of excitement, but certainly the U.S. is very much aware of the talent that Belgium has.
Mm. Have you changed your flights and your family's flights to after the World Cup final?
Well, I was always here for the duration, no matter how the U.S. did, so I haven't had to change anything quite just yet. But I am looking into flights to get to Brasilia, where the quarterfinal would be if the U.S. were to get through. So right. I'm trying to wrestle with that as we speak.
Right, I'm of course referencing Jurgen Klinsmann's instruction to the team to make sure that they're fully booked through right to the end of the tournament. This is going to be a huge game. I'm guessing maybe the biggest U.S. audience ever for a televised soccer game. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. 4 years ago, against Ghana, that was a huge match, and it garnered a lot of excitement and attention. But it seems like some incredible momentum has been generated this World Cup within the United States, and a lot of viewing parties, a lot of offices giving their employees the afternoon off or the evening off or whatever's needed. So it's going to be a huge audience that's going to tune in, and certainly there's a lot of hope that they're going to see a U.S. victory.
Mm. Is it important that they see a good game?
I really don't subscribe to the magic bullet theory, that one game or one moment is going to, transform the sport in the United States. I think there's been a stream of good decisions by U.S. Soccer, the Federation, as well as Major League Soccer, the domestic league, you know, they've made some smart business decisions in terms of expansion and sponsorship and things of that sort. And it's been a lot of slow, steady growth. So, you know, that's what I see, you know, really continuing. But, you know, certainly whenever that can be accelerated a little bit, you know, that's a great thing. So, you know, I think that's the most that, you know, that U.S. soccer fans can hope for from this game. But certainly it's been a fantastic tournament, and the U.S. team has obviously exceeded expectations, you know, given the group that they were placed in. So, yeah. You know, every little bit helps.
Okay, well, you got out of the so-called group of death. You've got Jose Altidore back, what it looks like probably he'll be back, which is very exciting news.
Well, that's being met with quite a bit of skepticism over here. You know, obviously he goes down with a hamstring injury in the Ghana game, and you know, today at his press conference, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann said that he would be available. And so, you know, the reporters, myself among them, tried to pin him down as to exactly what that meant. And he just said, well, he's going to be available. I don't know how many minutes he's going to be able to give us. So, you know, we were wondering if that isn't a little bit of misdirection on Klinsmann's part, you know, if he's trying to plant a seed in the minds of Belgian captain Mark Wilmots, and, you know, maybe just think that they may, you know, that Altidore is going to be on the field when, in fact, that's not quite going to be the case. I think the most that can be expected is that Altidore comes on as a late sub. You know, certainly given what he brings to the U.S. team, you know, that would be a boost. But it would not surprise me if he didn't play at all. So we'll have to see what happens, and if it was indeed a little bit of misdirection by Klinsmann.
Well, I can imagine that Mark Wilmots and the Belgian players might be terrified by the prospect of the presence of Jose Altidore on the pitch in the opposing team. I'm just curious to know, because I have no idea what he brings to the Sunderland team. What does he bring to the USA team?
Well, he brings hold-up play. He brings an ability to link with his teammates. I mean, this is a U.S. team that does, you know, that struggles to keep the ball, even in the best of times. So, you know, obviously, he did not have the greatest season at Sunderland. He has certainly struggled a ton in front of goal. But there's really no one else in the U.S. roster that can play with his back to goal like Altidore can. I mean, that's not to say that he's one of the best in the world at doing it, but it's just, you know, given the player pool that the U.S. has, you know, that's what Altidore brings. And that's what they struggled with, you know, in the ensuing matches, especially against Germany. You know, they kind of struggled to get the ball out of it. And, you know, some of that was due just to the way Germany plays and then the way they hunt the ball. But, you know, if Altidore is able to get on the field, I think that in that way, you know, just with his hold-up play, his ability to link up, you know, that's how he's going to help the U.S. team.
All right, Jeff. Listen, one last thing. How's the U.S. presence in Salvador? Is there already a massive build-up of American fans?
Yeah, you can just definitely see some people on the streets. I mean, I just got here early this morning, so I haven't had a chance to walk around too much. But, you know, I do think that a lot of people had to go home after the group stage. So, I mean, it will be interesting to see, you know, how much of a presence there is tomorrow night. But, you know, certainly the U.S. team's been very well supported here, and a lot of locals have kind of adopted the U.S. team as their second team. So you know, even if it's not a lot of U.S. natives that are cheering them on, it, you know, I think the neutrals will kind of gravitate towards the U.S. So but what you all see when I'm walking around later tonight, you know, how much of a presence there is.
All right.
A little bit that I've been able to see. I mean, you can definitely see some red, white, and blue.
Jeff Carlisle of ESPNFC.com. He's not wrong about that holding on to the ball. I know this because I read something that Michael Cox was writing before. He makes the point that they don't handle game states. Their game management is terrible, that basically they have good possession until they score, and then it shrinks, it shrivels to about 20% possession or something. And that's what kept catching them out, for example, in the early game, Portugal, I think, particularly. I've got the numbers here, but we don't need to get into the numbers. Anyway, that's a bit of a concern, isn't it? Belgium won a friendly with the United States 4-2 last May. They've only conceded one goal so far, and that was a penalty. Vincent Kompany's in doubt, is that right, James? You've been all over Belgium, you think?
I think I heard
Barry?
Somewhere that he will miss it.
Oh, really? And Hazard, has he been a bit quiet so far?
He has. I mean, apart from his part in the goal against Russia, where he did excellently, had to go past his man and set up Origi. He has been quite quiet. He has even Mark Wilmots was saying that he's yet to really impose himself on a game and take it by the scruff of its neck.
Could the same be true of Belgium? Because a lot of people have been saying that, and I saw you writing an article that effectively told those people that they were wrong.
Well, I think we've spoken about it before on the pod, that a lot were expecting more flair, flamboyance from this Belgian side, and they've actually been pretty pragmatic. And you know, for all the talk of them being inexperienced, their greatest quality so far has probably been their maturity, because they went behind against Algeria, came back to win. They left it late against Russia, could have settled for a draw, but won. And then in South Korea, they made a number of changes to their starting 11 to rest players in view of this game, because they'd already qualified and players on bookings, and they went down to 10 men at 0-0 and still won. So, they've shown an ability to sort of dig deep and get results, which wasn't the case under Wilmots' predecessor, Leyskins, I think. So,
what's going to happen then? Belgium, USA. Call it, Barry, call it.
Well, there's no doubt that Belgium are a better team with better players. I just have a feeling the USA are going to win this.
John, Belgium or USA?
I fancy Belgium, just because I think they're sort of bound. They feel like they're bound to sort of click at some point. And I do think at times, you know, the group that they came through was quite a stodgy one. And I was saying to somebody earlier that Group H, that at the end of the round of group games, it always feels like the sort of tacked on one, because it's behind. Just in the scheduling, it's just behind everybody else. Yeah. It always feels like the one that's lagging behind. And it wasn't the most sort of involving and exciting of groups, Algeria, South Korea apart. And so I wonder if we've sort of underrated Belgium's performances slightly so far, as sort of James was suggesting there.
Yeah,
They're probably going to have too much for the US.
All right, okay. Well, we shall see come Tuesday evening. Is that the early game or the late game? It's the...
It's the late game. It's the late 9 o'clock.
And it's preceded by Argentina-Switzerland. Now, Otmar Hitzfeld is going to retire after this World Cup. But he says, I don't think this will be my last match. What do you think about that? Are they going to stop Messi and stop Argentina, Switzerland?
Maybe they have a friendly set up for Argentina.
Oh, right, yeah, that could be when it was. Still, though, Argentina, in their group, they had Bosnia-Herzegovina, they had Iran, and they had Nigeria, and they didn't really convince against any of those sides. They had little scares and wobbles in all three matches.
No, they were outplayed in some spells in all of those matches, but you do get the feeling that they are growing into this tournament, or certainly Messi is. He, having been the decisive player in their first two ones, I mean, he immediately took over in that Nigeria game, scored early on, then got a free kick before half time, and the prevailing sense after that game was that he is reaching his sort of top form. And while the team around him is yet to sort of step to his level, I think they have perhaps more room to grow. I think they can still improve, although Aguero won't play in this game. He's injured, picked up a muscle injury in that final group match. And to be honest, they played better, I thought, without him, even though through qualifying, his relationship with Messi was supposed to be really good. The expectation was Lovetzi was going to come in. But it doesn't look like it might not be Lovetzi. It might be Maxi Rodriguez.
Ooh.
And they might change system again. So
I'd rather be talking up Switzerland's chances at this point. How about we do a little bit on Jürgen Schaciri? Because that's how you pronounce it, I've now discovered. Jürgen Schaciri. He had a hat-trick in that magnificent game against Honduras. His relationship with Dermot, talking about relationship, they looked fantastic, didn't they, the pair of them? They did. You didn't see this game? Oh, they did. Take it from me, they looked terrific.
Well, the Switzerland only, I think I'm right to say, only three teams in the last 16 scored more
than Switzerland.
In the group stages than Switzerland. But nobody conceded more.
It's Switzerland, but not as we know it.
Oh. Well, yeah, because they've always been stout in defence, but goal shy, and now they've completely flipped that around.
It's crazy, isn't it?
I think if they can produce the sort of performance they did against Spain 4 years ago, defensively, when they shocked them in the opening game, then why not? They can maybe have another surprise against Argentina. The question mark is the defending that we saw against France when they lost 5-2. Having said that, they did have Senderos and Giroud in the back. And I think in their final group game, Fabian Schär, the defender for Basel, who's highly regarded, came in, did a decent job. So if he starts, perhaps they'll have a better chance. And as you mentioned, Schaciri playing...
Schaciri.
Schaciri. Shat Cheery. That's Cheery. Right. Yeah. And imagine if he was playing against Shat. No, anyway. Shaqiri.
Shaqiri, yeah.
Yeah, playing what behind Djuric, their link up play was exceptional.
It probably was.
Some of the best in the tournament so far. So yeah, they have ability to cause Argentina.
We're
some,
very patiently talking this out. Barry and John are just thinking.
Well, I now have this image of Wyclef Jean in my head going Shaqiri, Shaqiri.
Which song is that?
Jordan Shaqiri talks about his hips not lying.
Oh right, yeah,
Shakira, yeah,
yeah.
There is a. I've got on my iPod a song that's just called Switzerland.
Really, how does it go?
The chorus sings about Switzerland.
Is it a Manic Street Preachers song?
No, it's by a band called. It's the most alt country name imaginable, which is the band called The Last Bison.
The Last Bison.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah, bit of banjo.
For all this fancy talk of Dermich and Shaqiri, I've just noticed that Switzerland's last game was in Manaus, which means, ergo, they're going to lose this one. The curse of Manaus. I'm not sure, that's probably over by now, but... Anyway, well, there you go. That's Argentina-Switzerland on Tuesday evening. Yeah. So we're going to come back on Tuesday night. We'll review what happened in that and the extraordinary Belgian-USA game. And we'll speak to you then. Many thanks, though, to Barry, to John, and to James Horncastle, and producer Ben, and you listeners, and to all the players and people of this World Cup who've made it such a terrific, entertaining tournament so far. We'll be back in about 24 hours. See you then.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. With World Cup fever taking over, we at The Guardian are pretty sure that you're thinking big too. So maybe now is the time to use Squarespace to create your own professional website for your small business, portfolio or blog. It's easy. You could create your own site during halftime. Just go to squarespace.com to start your free trial. And to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.